Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. In my estimation, one of the most important fronts in that war, of course, is the home front. There are few people I know who have done at any age, let alone at his tender age, as much to help the rest of us understand the nature of the war we're in on the domestic front, including from people who are nominally on our side, at least nominally, and the exposing that he has done in terms of particularly what the press and some others in the elite and non-governmental organizations and the like have been doing that is really undermining our democracy and endangering all of us is incalculably important. His name is James O'Keefe. He is the founder and president of the Project Veritas and Project Veritas Action. He has two best-selling books to his credit. Well, one is an incipient best-selling book, let me say. It's just come out. The first was Breakthrough, Our Guerrilla War to Expose Fraud and Save Democracy in 2013. It was on the New York Times bestseller list, and I'm quite sure that the new one, which we will be talking about at length today, American Pravda, My Fight for Truth in the Era of Fake News, will similarly find its way onto the bestseller list. James, it's so good to have you with us. Thank you so much for taking a few minutes, actually the full hour, to talk with us about the new book, Your Fight for Truth, and the extraordinary accomplishments you've had in that regard. It's so good to have you back. Happy New Year.
Thanks for having me, Frank.
Well, so I want to start with something that is very much top of mind at the moment, which is the exposing that you've done, some of which is laid out in the book, about Twitter and the big, well, sort of information technologies that are now such an important part of contemporary American public and political life. You have made, as is your wont, some extraordinary breakthroughs in exposing rather troubling behavior on the part of Twitter. James O'Keefe, talk a little bit about what you found and what it should suggest to all of us is something seriously amiss.
Well, you know, the social media companies have become the new media. They are the media. I mean, they have the ability to rewire human interactions, and they have the ability to censor language in such a way that you omit certain concepts. And we've all suspected that they're doing this. Many conservatives suggest that they shadow ban or mute people, and no one's ever really proven it. But what we do at Project Veritas is we confirm suspicions. So we went undercover into Twitter headquarters and talked to over a dozen engineers and executives who admitted how they do it, why they do it, and what they're doing. And extraordinary series of tapes have come out. The first one talked about how they can go into your DMs and give them to the Department of Justice to help the investigation into Donald Trump.
Those direct mails, yep.
Yes, and the second one admitting that the series of engineers admitting how they shadow ban, that's take information off of someone's timeline and how they are able to manipulate perception, ban a way of talking, one engineer calls it. Another executive inside Twitter by the name of Olinda Hassan on the Trust and Safety, the Orwellian-sounding Trust and Safety Council, she says they want to ban what she calls crappy people from Twitter, and they don't exactly define who these people are. So more abstractly, there's a lot of discussions going around about how these companies have become sort of monopolies, purveyors of information. And they may not believe that they are, in fact, media companies, but of course they're media companies. And they are the new trusts, the new oil trusts from 100 years ago. So someone, I'm not suggesting the government regulate them. Maybe there's another free market solution. But at the very least, they need to make their algorithms public. And the last video that we released showed executives at Twitter talking about how they have hundreds of engineers who go in and look at your private text messages, you know, Twitter direct messages they're called, and you your private pictures of your private parts, which I don't put that stuff online, but many people communicate with their wife and girlfriend. So you have this sort of perverted aspect too. And it's just confirming what we've all believed. And it's pretty amazing footage, and we're just getting started to do more. But there's a lot to unpack there and what it all means.
Yeah, and that's where I'd like to go next, James O'Keefe. You're describing an unregulated entity that has the ability to both censor and expose private information being exchanged by individual users. This is unfortunately not unique to Twitter. There is evidence that similar things are being done by Google and by Facebook. I don't know that they call them the Trust and Safety Council, but you're right, that does sound Orwellian. But its job is to purge information that is deemed to be, for whatever reason, politically incorrect, I guess is one common one. Things that they don't approve of, crappy people and the like. Some have suggested we're crappy people, so this is of particular concern to me and those of us who are warning about, you know, Sharia supremacism, for example. What have you learned about the algorithms or the methodologies or the kinds of filters that are being applied here?
Well, in the second video, the engineer, this is an Indian guy on H-1B-1 visa. He works at Twitter, and his name is, it's not Mo Murai, it's there's a guy named Abhinu Vadravu who talks about shadow banning. You can sort of turn off all the features for them, so they can still see everything. You can like it, you can favorite it, or you can like retweet, but at the end of the day, no one else interacts, no one else sees what you're doing. So all that data is just thrown away. And he confirms that this was actually done. He says, you know, I don't work at Twitter anymore. He says, I don't know if they still do that. But he confirms that it was done. Another engineer on the Twitter direct messaging team talks about how there's sort of weights and measures assigned to each the words that are associated with tweets. So you have Pranay Singh at Twitter who talks about how if you're tweeting about God or about cross or about the American flag, these algorithms can assign key measures. Think of them like scales, so like 0.5 for one word and one and numerical values that will weigh the information differently. So that if you tweet about, say, the American flag, Twitter engineers may more increasingly likely to consider you to be a Russian bot. Now, of course, many people are not Russian bots who tweet about the American flag, but according to the people in Silicon Valley, they've set up the computer algorithms in such a way that they will necessarily consider to be a Russian bot. That may seem unbelievable, but it's admitted in the tape by the engineer himself.
Yeah. No, you know, it's so interesting that you say this, because just today, James O'Keefe, there was a report on National Public Radio in which they talked about the fact that Russian bots were amplifying, promoting, pushing, otherwise manipulating the whole campaign to release the memo. That is to say, the memo the House Intelligence Committee did ultimately release with the president's approval last week. And, you know, when the interviewer drilled down a little bit, it was pretty clear they weren't entirely sure how much Russian botting was going on here, and acknowledged sort of reluctantly that actually a lot of it was American people. Maybe 15% was Russian bots, they calculated. This is a reporter from Politico who broke this story. But it just does raise the question, how much of this is being manipulated or manufactured or otherwise misrepresented by Google or Twitter or Facebook engineers, completely unaccountable to their users or the public more generally?
Yes, they are completely unaccountable, which is why I think they need to release some of these algorithms and make them public. You know, they are private companies, they can do what they want, but they have to be accountable to their own user interface.
Hey, James, hold the thought because we're going to come back to that. But in fact, they benefit from certain favorable treatment by the government. And I think there is an argument that they should be more accountable. We'll be right back with more with James O'Keefe in this very special interview with the author of the brand new and very important book, American Pravda, My Fight for Truth in the Era of Fake News. Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney. You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back. We are joined by James O'Keefe. He is the driving force behind an incredibly important organization, the Project Veritas. He is also the author of Breakthrough, Our Guerrilla War to Expose Fraud and Save Democracy, and most recently, the new book, American Pravda, My Fight for Truth in the Era of Fake News. And Pravda, of course, is the name of the notorious Soviet publication. It means truth, literally, in Russian, but, of course, had anything but the truth in it during the Soviet era. Let me ask you, James, just on this point about accountability that we were discussing in the previous segment concerning the social media giants and whether they should be, in fact, subject to, well, if not actual regulation by the government, at least accountability. They benefit from statutory protection against lawsuits on the grounds that they are providing, you know, an important public service. And yet, that clearly is enabling them to conduct themselves in a manner that is, as you've documented in the case of Twitter, and I think it applies to some of these others, problematic, to say the least. So in light of that immunity, should there not be some greater susceptibility to government oversight and accountability?
That's the question. What is the solution to these problems is one of the things that people ask. And by the way, we have 400 members of, you know, hundreds of members of Congress and dozens of policy think tanks and all of these subject matter experts who probably have all the solutions manifest. My job is to sort of expose the facts and, you know, reality, but which is no one else in journalism world, which is one of the things this book, American Pravda, is about. No one seems to be able or willing to do that, or they're afraid to do it. I think the solution's probably in the free market. Some people say they should be regulated like public utilities. I know there are some people at Breitbart who've said that in the past. I'm not quite sure about that. I think it's more likely the case that there's you know, these user agreements, when you sign up for these social media companies, you are signing away your rights. I mean, they have the right to do whatever they want to your data. The question is, do you know that?
Right. And is that right in some way not countermanded by what the government is allowing them to do? And James, there's more to say on this question of what's the right answer, but let me ask you about the role that you are playing at Project Veritas in exposing, as you say, going where no other media platforms are able, perhaps, or certainly willing to go, to expose wrongdoing, really, or other, you know, problems for the American people or our polity. I'd like to ask you to sort of tease out some of the most important themes that you feel you've covered and laid bare for us in American Pravda.
Well, you know, American Pravda is, you know, an exceptional, rollicking adventure story on one level. It's an action adventure story. It's a treatise on modern media. It follows our undercover reporters around as they go infiltrate and unmask political officials and voter fraud. And the reason why I called it Pravda is because the difference between the American press and the Soviet state newspaper Pravda was that the Russian people knew they were being lied to. So privately, they joked about it. They thought it was a practical joke. And in the United States, I mean, of course, they were afraid to do anything about it. They were afraid to go public with it because that then they would be sent off to the gulags, right? And in this country, I think we have a problem where a lot of people actually still believe. They still believe the New York Times and CNN, and CNN, only a million people watch it, but they have tremendous power over the American consumer.
And in a way, if you violate what they are saying, if you counter their narratives, you don't go physically to some terrible gulag, but you can be banished into the realm of the politically incorrect and the people who are not fit for polite company. Can you not?
Which is in many ways worse. In our day and age, people would rather in this country give up their lives than their reputations. And Marcus Luttrell, in this book, I talk about moral courage. I talk about the need to sort of go after the sacred cows to expose the facts. There used to be journalists who used to do this work. I mean, this is not necessarily something new under the sun. It's all a little bit of history repeating in the new information age. You had progressive muckrakers who would go undercover into the Chicago meatpacking plants, like Upton Sinclair. You had Lincoln Stevens and Ida Tarbell expose the rot and shame of the cities. You had undercover reporters from the 20s until the 70s in the 20th century that went after Medicaid abuses and entitlement fraud and voter fraud. The Chicago Sun-Times went undercover into poll locations, showing ballots given out willy-nilly to strangers who asked for them, which is what we did in the last 5 years. And these guys won Pulitzer Prizes for doing this type of thing. And what's happened in society, we are at there's a chapter here I call recognizing propaganda, and we are entering what F.A. Hayek described as the sort of end of truth, which is, I think, you know, it's all history repeats itself. George Orwell wrote 1984, and George Orwell wrote that the establishment, or in this case, the deep state in modern times, would ask you to deny the evidence of your own eyes and ears. It's their final, most essential commandment. And its case in point is this memo, for example, that no one wants to actually point out what facts are in it. It's all about attacking the whistleblower and attacking the parties who are talking about it. But I think we've reached the end of truth, where what Hayek says, the whole apparatus for spreading knowledge, the school and the press, the radio, the movies, it's all about strengthening the belief in the rightness of the establishment and the authority. And all information that might cause doubt or hesitation in the status quo needs to be questioned and withheld. So what you have is, you have independent citizen journalists like Project Veritas who are putting out facts, putting out manifestly damning facts and evidence. And the system wants to attack us and jail us and shut us down and kneecap us. And that's what this book is about. It's about surviving that. It's about circumventing that. It's about the reasons why it's gotten this far and some amazing stories in the field of what we have accomplished and how we've done it, sort of the roadmap for the future.
And to the extent that you lay this out in the book, American Pravda, James, I was struck that you've actually exposed some of your tradecraft, you know, the daring do, as you say, the action drama, really, of penetrating some of these organizations that you've gotten inside of and exposing them, and then how you have brought that exposure to the largest public light. And, of course, Acorn, I guess, was sort of your maiden voyage in this space, and was an extraordinary achievement. I'm not sure they're completely out of business, but they certainly were taken out for a time. Talk very quickly, if you would, about sort of the main takeaway from that experience.
Well, I mean, you're right. We do get into a little of the covert methods in this book. There's a chapter called Magic, where we talk about Project Veritas, this book, American Pravda. You know, if prostitution is the oldest profession, intelligence gathering is a close second. We do basically undercover work, which is, you know, we learn a lot of our techniques from the intelligence community. In fact, we have one of the people that works with us is a former member of the intelligence community. And I've learned these things sort of, I've never been in military intelligence. I've never been a Navy SEAL or an FBI agent, but I've learned through the school of hard knocks how to do it.
Hold the thought. You do it extraordinarily well, and what we want to talk about on the other side of the break is some of the insights that you've learned along the trail in that school of hard knocks. More with Our guest, James O'Keefe of Project Veritas, the author of a new incipient bestseller, I'm certain, American Pravda, My Fight for Truth in the Era of Fake News. Straight ahead.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're visiting with James O'Keefe. He is best known for his undercover investigations and the mighty, the powerful, the unaccountable that he has held to account as a result of his derring do. With his team of undercover investigators, their video cameras, their tape machines, and much of this is laid out in his new book, American Pravda, My Fight for Truth in the Era of Fake News. And James, again, thank you for giving us a full hour of your time. It's so appreciated. You were just in the process of laying out some of the hard knocks that you've learned along the way of trying to expose some of those who are otherwise unaccountable, and I'd invite you to pick up that theme.
Well, if prostitution is the oldest profession, intelligence gathering is a close second. It seems somehow fitting that in our first major investigation, the Acorn infiltration, we managed to combine both, or at least the appearance of both. And what we do at Project Veritas is we use deception as a means to gain access to people. And I've been attacked viciously on this front, by the way, by the media. Well, you use an alias. Well, yes, we use an alias to get people to open up because we believe that there is no virtue in passing along untrue information from your sources to the masses, which is what happens in journalism today. This has become a practical joke. I mean, if you're watching this memo thing, Yahoo News was a circular information thing. They were utilizing information to justify certain things. Lost in the perversion that is modern journalism is, where is the truth? And how do you get to the truth? So what we do at Project Veritas is we basically go undercover and we win friends and influence people. We build trust with people. We cultivate people through empathy, chemistry, and charm. We spent a year undercover in the Hillary Clinton campaign in order, you know, we posed as a donor who had a niece, and the niece got into the office of Bob Creamer, who's really good friends with Barack Obama, as Creamer was talking about how they were inciting this violence on the ground with his colleague Scott Fogel, using money that originally came from Hillary Clinton.
And you are being sued by Bob Creamer, as I understand it, for having brought the truth to light of activities that I think by any reasonable standard would be considered crimes in their own right.
Yeah, we're being sued in federal court. We have some 12 civil actions against us right now. We are being sued. I've had a restraining order overturned in Michigan against us for having information on the teachers union. I'm being sued in California by Common Core executives because they said they hate children. I've been sued by Acorn for invasion of privacy, sued by Bob Creamer for trespass and breach of fiduciary duty, even though we never signed a non-disclosure agreement. So I'm being targeted by the California Attorney General, the New York Attorney General. I've been incarcerated and on probation. The reason why people don't do this thing, what we do at Project Veritas, is because you are going to get viciously and savagely attacked. And Frank, what I've learned is that it's not just from the enemy, and I hate to use the word enemy, maybe, but you know they view me as their enemy. I don't know why. I'm just doing the jobs that they should be doing, but also by your friends, because the temptation to get that praise on the front page of the New York Times is just too great for many people in the freedom fighter movement. They know that if they condemn and criticize me, that they will be lauded in the pages of the New York Times. And it's a real problem, and that's why the media still has tremendous power and leverage over the country, because they still have the power to shame and humiliate, and it is ultimately this humiliation and shame that most people, particularly in Washington, D.C., fear the most.
We call that in Washington, James, growing in office. People who may even have run against the New York Times or the Washington Post or the establishment, the elite, what have you, will grow in office, according to those same folks, that as they become part of the swamp, as they, go after people like you who are unshakably door opening, exposing, bringing sunlight to bear on what that swamp is up to. I just want to say, as heartening as it was for me, I'm sure it was for you, then, given all of this, to have received back in December one of the United in Purpose Impact Awards. This was a recognition of, I guess, 12 of us who, you know, were thanked publicly for the work that we've been doing by some of our friends. And I think your tribute on that occasion was particularly well-deserved in light of the kind of grief and worse that you have been taking, not least from these attorneys general. Obviously, you're a nonprofit organization. I can't imagine what your legal bills are running, let alone the costs associated with doing your job. If people appreciate all that you do, James O'Keefe, and I hope they will, especially after they take a look at American Pravda, my fight for truth in the era of fake news, how can they support your work?
Well, the best way to support us right now is to buy this book, American Pravda, at this juncture, because I think people need to hear this, read the stories. We are a nonprofit organization, and I'm the head of that organization. We've got some 50 people associated with us now, and it's expensive. It's really expensive work, and the problem with being a charity is that you're regulated by the states. And now, because we're no longer a country of equal justice under law, attorneys general in places like New York and California spend all of their time not chasing criminals and holding people to account, but like chasing after me and looking through my, you know, emails through audits and so forth, just trying to hurt me. And Frank, one of the things that happened in recent days is that, this is unbelievable. This is truly unbelievable. If you want to think you're living in the United States of America, listen to this. One of our donors wanted to send us a contribution. We have 20,000 donors. And the donor wanted to send a sizable contribution and wanted to send it through Fidelity, which is a independent financial institution. And the financial institution said, no, we don't. We can't send your donation to James O'Keefe's organization, Project Veritas, because they are under investigation by the New York Attorney General. Now, we're not actually under, he sent us a letter asking us for some things. There's no actual criminal thing, there's no problem. But the cloud of suspicion that these attorneys general can create, it's like the tail wagging the dog. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
I don't know whether, James, you have been subjected to this in addition to your other efforts to take you down, but the Southern Poverty Law Center, of course, has been very much engaged in this kind of mau-mauing of people they don't approve of. Essentially, they're playing a role, as you know, as a sort of instrument of political warfare for the hard left. But the moment they identify you as a hater or racist or bigot or whatever else, you can find yourself under that same sort of cloud. And you can see, indeed, some organizations, for a time, PayPal was among them, saying, hey, we can't service contributions to you, or we can't at Google or Facebook or Twitter or what have you put out your products on our servers. It's a kind of takedown that is, as you've really rightly said in American Pravda, it's Orwellian now, and most of it's going on without people being aware that it's going on.
It's going on. People, like the Soviet Union, I read The Gulag Archipelago by Alexander Solzhenitsyn, and if you haven't read the book, you should read American Pravda by James O'Keefe and Gulag Archipelago. Many people read it years ago. Solzhenitsyn is one of my heroes, and I was not alive, you know, when he was around, but he writes about the Potemkin villages in the Soviet Union. The Western New York Times would go to the Soviet Union and they would report on, oh, everyone's fat and happy, you know, everybody's paradise, and then they'd win a Pulitzer Prize for that crap. And then Stalin would murder and rape all the people. So we are living in a very interesting time where the sides, the center cannot hold, because the right and left are so divergent that facts no longer matter. It's all about narrative. It's all about Jake Tapper last week, just to say one thing about this. Jake Tapper tweeted out, let's see the underlying transcript of McCabe. That's the FBI director who said that he based the whole thing on the fake dossier. And Tapper didn't believe that fact. He said he wanted to see the underlying transcript. My remarks to the mainstream media is, I don't believe you. I don't believe your anonymous sources. I don't believe your conjecture. I don't believe any of it.
Yeah, no kidding. There's a lot more reason for that disbelief, that's for sure. James O'Keefe, we have to take one last break. We'll be right back with more with the author of American Pravda, My Fight for Truth in the Era of Fake News, James O'Keefe of Project Veritas. Straight ahead.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio. Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Welcome back for the final installment of our very special conversation with James O'Keefe, a remarkable young man with already great accomplishments to his credit. He has his detractors, to be sure. Many of them would like to silence him and shut down Project Veritas through legal action, if not through character assassination. I'm very proud to say that he has nonetheless soldiered on and is recounting some of not only the things that he's been striving to do in his, as he calls it, fight for truth in the era of fake news, but also the ways in which he has done it. And the book starts off with a very interesting account of a conversation you had, I believe, in 2013 with a man you describe as Citizen Trump. At the time, this was before he obviously had thrown his hat into the ring for the presidency. Talk a little bit about your interaction with him on that occasion, James O'Keefe, and whether you have continued your relationship in the years since.
Well, I think there's a synergy between Trump and Project Veritas. I think that's the right word, a synergy. Trump has been able to lob the football field, the football over the press pool. Right, and the press pool is beside itself because they have lost some of their power, and they're sort of, I mean, to borrow Dinesh D'Souza's words in the 2016 election, they were huffing and puffing trying to drag that Hillary Clinton across the finish line, and they failed. And all the weaponry of all the organs of the propaganda outlet. So we're trying to do this, and they failed. So Trump and Veritas have something in common. We believe in the, and I, this is maybe I, Trump hasn't stated it, but it's implicit. We believe in the power of free people, that if given the information, will make the best decisions. That people need to have the information for themselves. That they shouldn't trust sort of the delivered to them by these outlets like CNN, some compressing and digesting and interpreting reality. So we have that in common. I met with them in 2013. And what was extraordinary about the meeting was that, you know, Trump said, have you ever thought about looking into Obama's records at Columbia? And I quickly dawned upon me after talking to him for half an hour that I don't think he disbelieved that Obama was born in the United States. I think what he was getting at was that perhaps Obama misrepresented himself to Columbia University about where he was born in order to gain advantage of various policies that would help him get in. And there was another thing that happened with a publishing company where it was misrepresented that he was born in Kenya. So Trump just said, why can't you get access to these records, investigate, look into that? And at the time, this was like 5 years ago, I didn't really have the requisite team to do that. These days, I probably could do something like that. Of course, I would have to do it legally, and I'd have to talk to the officials the way that we do. So that was the first meeting with Trump. In subsequent meetings, he would compliment crossing the border dressed like Osama bin Laden. He loved that video.
Classic.
And he you know, I was targeted by DHS and detained at the borders and airports, and we talked about that.
No senses of humor, I take it.
He loved the videos exposing the violence at Trump rallies, and I showed him those videos. I went to visit him in his office right before he announced and right after he announced, and it was just him and Corey Lewandowski. And on the whiteboard, it just said, let Trump be Trump. That's what it said on Corey Lewandowski's whiteboard days after he announced, when nobody, it was a one in a million shot. So, I mean, there are some synergies there, and there's some discussion in the book about me meeting him.
But let me ask you, because in a way, the perfect example of the phenomenon you're talking about, what's come to now be called fake news, Some believe it's really just propaganda as much as anything, but he has been targeted by it in a way that that makes your own travails pale by comparison, I think it's fair to say, bad as they've been. But as you've sort of sussed this out and where we are with respect to the so-called mainstream media and the role that it plays, James O'Keefe, and the way it does its job, Jake Tapper among them, I think, what is the import for a republic like ours if the Fourth Estate, as it's called, with all of the protections and immunities that it has under the First Amendment, is actually playing a nakedly partisan role, in this case specifically against Donald Trump?
I think it's become much more nakedly partisan. It's Andrew Breitbart used to call it the Democrat media complex, which I've heard tossed around. It's not just political, it's economic. You know, Noam Chomsky wrote a book called Manufacturing Consent. And it's some political, but it's we went undercover into CNN back in July, and the guy said it's all about ratings. It's all just for ratings. The CEO of CNN, Jeff Zucker, said in an internal meeting, he said, enough of the climate accords, let's get back to Russia. And the Washington Post national security reporters who were confiding to us that it's all about just, you know, selling newspapers, and it's about we don't know where these opinions come from. We don't know if there's even a story on Russia yet. So I think it's economics, sort of hysteria, doubling down syndrome. They've lost the election, and now they have to, they cannot admit fault. They can't apologize. They have to double down, play to their base, and play to the people, the hands that feed them. So it's this sort of self-fulfilling prophecy. And the only way that it's going to be challenged, if independent people like me and other people, like not always on the right, some people like Michael Hastings was a center-left individual, they have to sort of go out on their own and forge a path. And the trials and travails and triumphs and tragedies that come with that journey, it's pretty bad. And I think that the people of this country need to know about that, and they need to know what is required to do this type of work, and the moral courage, not just on my team, but the temptation to criticize people for bucking the system and exposing the truth. There was one article, Frank, today came out in the New York Times today saying that all of our videos are fake and that we use CGI to make people's lips move. I'm not making this up. And they're saying we have to safeguard against people like James O'Keefe who make fake videos.
Well, let me afford you an opportunity to respond to that charge directly. Do you use any kind of doctoring or selective editing, for that matter, to make people say or present information in a way that is other than what you have found to be the unvarnished truth?
No, but the mainstream media does. I mean, I people keep resigning from our videos. They keep saying, admitting they said what they said. They keep saying, oh, I apologize. I was too honest, said Dan Lamothe. Or CNN said, we support diversity of personal opinion after our videos. And Bob Cramer said, I need to step back from the Hillary Clinton campaign. I've become a distraction. We've never been sued for editing. We've been sued for invasion of privacy, but that's a different issue. And that's an issue that we're contesting in these government offices. But no, Katie Couric was sued for defamation. She doctored the gun documentary. John Oliver was sued by energy companies. Alison Camerota was exposed when you fattened that clip and saw how she edited out people's comments. The media doctors and edits and transfixes and misinterprets and misrepresents everything they do because they use words instead of pictures.
And in a way, what you've just describe really is what we've seen so much of, particularly since the Hillary Clinton email scandals broke and then what has flowed from them in terms of the various assertions of Russian collusion and so on, and that is deflection, isn't it? It's people accusing you of doing what they're doing themselves. James O'Keefe, I just want to tell you how much I appreciate you and the work you do, and I know my audience does as well. You are an extraordinary resource as well as a vehicle for accountability at a time when we need more of it, not less. I hope you will keep up, and know you will keep up, the great work you do at the Project Veritas and Project Veritas Action. Find out more about it and how you can support it by buying, most immediately, American Pravda, My Fight for Truth in the Era of Fake News. James, thank you. I hope we'll help talk often in 2018. Thanks for joining us today. Hope the rest of you will join us again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Affney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.